Welcome. Here are a few highlights of this month's program. During the COVID-19 pandemic, some of Jehovah's people suffered heartbreaking losses. We'll see how Jehovah's love triumphed over tragedy. We cherish the rich diversity of our global brotherhood, but could our local culture somehow influence our thinking and undermine our precious unity? And our new music video reminds us that unity not only makes us joyful, but it makes us strong. This is JW Broadcasting for May 2022. The theme of this year's regional convention is Pursue Peace. Here's a preview of the program.
Peace is often defined as the absence of conflict. But peace involves much more. The truth is, we each face trials that can rob us of peace. Illness, economic problems, our own weaknesses, damaged relationships. What threatens your peace? At the 2022 Pursue Peace Convention of Jehovah's Witnesses, you will discover how you can find real, lasting peace in your life right now.
Our convention theme is so timely. The world is full of conflict and anguish. People long for peace, and they long for unity, which is the focus of this month's broadcast. Our theme is Stand Together as One United People. Let me begin with a question. Where do you keep your wallet? If you're out in public, you brothers likely keep it in your pocket, maybe a front pocket, so that it doesn't get lost or stolen. You sisters might carry your wallet in a purse or handbag, which you keep close by your side. You guard your wallet because you know that if you get careless, a thief might steal it, and you might never see your wallet or its contents again. It is similar with the precious unity we enjoy as Jehovah's people. We need to guard it and protect it, or else someone might steal it. Make no mistake, the devil is looking for an opportunity to steal our unity from us. Think about how unique our unity is. Unlike other religious organizations, we're not divided into sub-denominations. We don't have Northern Jehovah's Witnesses, Orthodox Jehovah's Witnesses, or Reformed Jehovah's Witnesses. As the Apostle Paul expressed it, we are united in the same mind and in the same line of thought. We are also united internationally. We don't fight against one another in the wars that divide nations. And we are united racially. Many times, witnesses have risked their lives to protect their fellow Christians of another race who were being threatened or persecuted because of their racial or ethnic background. We are also united in our purpose. For example, no matter where we live, we all preach the same good news, and we all receive the same weekly spiritual instruction. Can you find this unity out in the world? Look around. People are divided. Nations attack each other. And within nations, political parties fight one another. Corporations compete with and destroy each other. And citizens commit racially or ethnically motivated hate crimes against each other. What a contrast that is with Jehovah's worshipers. We stand together as one united people. Why, though, do we each need to guard and protect our unity? Can't we safely assume that Jehovah will protect it and that he will see to it that our unity is preserved? Not entirely. Guarding the unity of God's people is a responsibility that Jehovah has given each one of us. We must do our part to ensure that we stand together as one united people. What will happen if we don't? Divisions will occur among us, divisions that resemble what we see in the world. It happened in the first century congregation in Corinth. To them, Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 11, "There are dissensions among you." What kind of dissensions? Some said, "I belong to Peter." Others said, "I belong to Paul." And still others said, "I belong to Apollos." Paul felt compelled to ask at 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 13, "Is the Christ divided?" What a reproach on Jehovah's name and on true worship. By failing to guard their unity, those early disciples were making Christianity look like just another religion. Could something like that happen in a congregation today? It could happen if individuals cared more about their own personal preferences, conveniences, and opinions than they do about the unity of Jehovah's people. Selfishness is not the fruitage of Jehovah's Spirit. Rather, it reflects the spirit of the world. The world is aggressively promoting the view that you should put yourself first. But we have learned Jehovah's view. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 24 tells us to keep seeking not our own advantage, but that of the other person. In chapter 13, verse 5, Paul wrote that love does not look for its own interests. And he states at Romans chapter 15 and verse 3 that the Christ did not please himself. Therefore, we cannot afford to care more about our privileges, our pride, or our opinions than we do about Christian unity. If we put our own wants first, then just like a man who leaves his wallet out in public for a thief to steal, we place the congregation's unity in plain view for Satan to snatch. And there is no doubt that the devil will seize the opportunity and the congregation will suffer. We need to accept our personal responsibility to guard and protect our unity, not only as a congregation, but also as field service groups, families, married couples, and friends. So let's now discuss four areas where we especially need to guard and protect our Christian unity. The first is our response to direction from Jehovah's organization. When the COVID-19 pandemic struck in 2020, we all received direction, including new ways to attend our meetings and carry out our ministry, and ways to comply with the secular authorities. Did you disagree? Or did you have a different idea? If so, did you follow the direction anyway and give it your support? If you did, then you contributed to our unity. When we stand together and unitedly follow direction from Jehovah's organization, good things happen. Like what? Like what happened when the first century Christians complied with the direction from the apostles and older men in Jerusalem. Acts chapter 16, verses 4 and 5 says, "As they traveled on through the cities, they would deliver to them for observance the decrees that had been decided on by the apostles and the elders who were in Jerusalem. Then indeed, the congregations continued to be made firm in the faith and to increase in number day by day." Individual Christians and congregations recognized and submitted to the authority of the governing body at that time, the apostles and elders who were in Jerusalem. Did you note the beneficial results? The congregations continued to be made firm and to increase. And that's what happened when you, brothers and sisters, followed the direction regarding the COVID-19 pandemic. We experienced significant increases in meeting attendance. The attendance for the 2021 memorial reached an all-time peak. It is amazing what Jehovah accomplishes when we stand together as one united people. A second area in which we need to protect our unity is culture. Jehovah's organization is diverse. We love to be introduced to different kinds of food, different styles of dress, and interesting customs. How wonderful! But what if we started feeling that my race, my tribe, my ethnicity, my culture is superior? Can you see how that kind of thinking would divide us? To preserve our unity, we need to focus not on how we are different from one another, but how we are the same. We are Jehovah's Witnesses first, not African, Asian, North American, South American, or European. Our people are our spiritual family, our spiritual brothers and sisters. Our culture is genuine Christianity. When we are willing to adopt Jehovah's thinking that we learn from His Word, even setting aside our own personal customs or culture if necessary, we stand together as one united people. We experience what the Bible describes at Zephaniah chapter 3 and verse 9. "For then I will change the language of the peoples to a pure language, so that all of them may call on the name of Jehovah to serve Him shoulder to shoulder." How wonderful! A third area is personality differences. Growing up in this divided world, we may have absorbed some of its sensitivities, but Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 9 says, "Do not be quick to take offense." If a fellow Christian hurts our feelings, we have a special opportunity and obligation to show that we stand together as one united people. How can we do that? Colossians chapter 3 and verse 13 says, "Continue putting up with one another and forgiving one another freely, even if anyone has a cause for complaint against another. Just as Jehovah freely forgave you, you must also do the same." Note both phrases, putting up with one another and forgiving one another. Some imperfections and slights are so small. Do they really require formal forgiveness? Because of our human imperfection, we need to do what Paul says. We have to learn to just put up with them. For example, maybe a certain family did not include us in a gathering at their home, or a brother failed to greet us in the kingdom hall, or call on us to give a comment at the meeting. These things may irritate us or even hurt our feelings, but they are not sins that we need to forgive. They are mere slights or imperfections that we need to learn to put up with. On the other hand, if a fellow Christian has actually sinned against us in some way, giving us a genuine cause for complaint, what does the Scripture encourage us to do? Forgive one another freely. That is what Jehovah does for you and for me. Putting up with and forgiving one another is vital if we are to stand together as one united people. Our fourth area is how we respond when our brothers are in distress. While coping with the COVID-19 pandemic, numerous lands were hit by other disasters, hurricanes, volcanoes, fires. But our brothers also experience other forms of distress, like the effects of old age, the loss of a loved one in death, chronic health problems, and the list goes on and on. What do Jehovah's Witnesses do when we see our brothers in distress? We immediately come to their aid. We stand together. In this very selfish and divided world, this is not a small thing. It is not something to take for granted. Jesus said at John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35, that this deep, unselfish love in action would identify his true disciples. Therefore, brothers and sisters, as we work hard to stand together in the four areas that we have discussed, we give powerful evidence that we are true disciples of Christ Jesus. Jesus knew that unity was vital. On the night before he was put to death, he was concerned that his disciples would remain united. He prayed at John chapter 17 and verses 20 to 22. I make request, not concerning these only, but also concerning those putting faith in me through their word, so that they may all be one, just as you, Father, are in union with me, and I am in union with you, that they also may be in union with us, so that the world may believe that you sent me. I have given them the glory that you have given me, in order that they may be one just as we are one. Obviously, Jehovah answered that prayer. He is teaching us to stand together as one united people. Therefore, dear brothers and sisters, let us renew our determination to protect our Christian unity by following direction from Jehovah's organization, by valuing Jehovah's thinking more than our own culture, by putting up with and forgiving one another freely, and by helping one another in times of distress. By doing so, we will not allow Satan to steal our precious unity. Instead, we will stand together as one united people. Without question, the COVID pandemic was a time of distress for everyone. Sadly, some of our brothers and sisters lost family members to the virus. How could love be shown to these dear ones in the midst of the pandemic? We'll see how this was accomplished in our next video.
My husband contracted COVID-19. He was brought to the ICU, and 2 days later, he passed away. We weren't able to say goodbye. We weren't able to see each other. We weren't able to have our last conversation.
My husband and I got sick in the month of March 2020, and then my husband fell asleep in death. Isolation can make you depressed. I would say that was the worst time of my life.
My husband contracted COVID and he was breathing heavily. So I called 911. The ambulance took him, and on the way to the hospital, his heart stopped.
My bank account was blocked. I had debts. I had COVID. And the landlord gave me a week to leave the house.
My husband used to do everything. And now it's my responsibility to be the spiritual head of the family. I needed help. The elders helped me prepare for family worship. That's exactly what we needed at that moment.
There were times I felt dejected and weak. The sisters really helped me by showing personal interest. In fact, not a day went by without them calling me.
I was feeling tired, without strength. I felt helpless. So the friends took care of the entire move, helped to clean the house, and helped me out financially. They were like my arms and legs. They supported me. I felt like my spiritual family was carrying me in their arms.
Everything that my brothers and sisters did for me during that difficult time, the messages, the postcards, the flowers, that shows me the kind of family that I have. That's what the kids really needed to see, that we were not alone, that our friends were there, even though they couldn't be here physically with us.
The brothers have encouraged me in so many ways. From letters from pioneers spread all over Italy, to video calls, phone calls, and messages, I realize that there will always be someone Jehovah uses to comfort me.
Before, I felt weak and powerless. Jehovah gave me strength. He helped me by means of the brothers.
The day after my husband died, I was so surprised. When I opened the door, our friends started singing for us. At that moment, I realized we're not going to be alone. We have our spiritual family.
I began to speak to Jehovah more intensely. Before, I would talk to my husband about everything. Now, I share my problems and anxieties with Jehovah.
So I've been keeping a little journal of everything that Jehovah has done for us. And I write it down because I want to be able to tell my husband when I see him again.
I didn't feel alone at any time. I felt that I belonged to a family that was caring for me and supporting me.
I really saw Jehovah's love and the help he gives.
He could do anything to help you feel better when you're going through trials.
Seeing Jehovah's support for me by means of the brothers makes me feel secure, thinking about how he will support me in the future.
I can say that in the future, I am absolutely certain that Jehovah will be with me.
There's no pandemic, there's no bad situation that will prevent Jehovah to reach anyone when they're going through trials.
Our hearts go out to all who have lost loved ones during the pandemic. We are not shielded from time and unexpected events, but Jehovah always helps us to endure hardship, often through the love shown by our brothers and sisters. We help each other during crises. We also show love in everyday matters, as we'll see in the following video. Thank you.
Everything I know about Kingdom Hall maintenance, I learned from Brother Hojin Kamp. He encouraged me when I needed a little push. Taught me the right way to do things. And continued to teach me with kindness and love. So when he asked to borrow a ladder, I was happy to lend him mine.
Honey! Here are some things I need. For a lunch today, with the Youngs?
Mm-hmm.
What's the ladder for?
Hojin needs it.
Hojin? How's he doing? I heard something about a cane.
Hojin? A cane? No way. He's still as strong as an ox.
Maybe. But it seems like... Well, you'll see how he's doing. And don't forget to stop at the store.
Hojin? A cane? No way.
I'm coming. Here I come.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
Is everything okay?
I just can't dash down the stairs.
I was on my way to the store and thought I'd drop off the ladder.
Thanks. Just leave it by the garage. It's almost time for lunch. The gutters can wait. They've waited this long.
Okay, will do. Bye.
Drive safe.
Gutters?
Hi, honey.
Okay. But...
What about lunch? The Youngs will be here in an hour.
I know. I picked up the items you asked for, but I can't just leave. It got me thinking about the neighborly Samaritan. When we see a need, we can't be like the priest and Levite who just walked away. The Samaritan cared enough to stop, examine the need. Take the time to help the poor man. A man he didn't even know.
Of course. Work what is good toward all,
but especially toward those related to us in the faith.
I love you. And I have an idea. Let's not cancel with the Youngs. I'll go back and pick up my ladder and tell Hojin that I'll come back Saturday afternoon to help him clean out the gutters. It's such a blessing to be able to care for the needs of our brothers and feel their loving care for us.
What do we learn from this dramatization? When we think deeply about the needs of our brothers, we'll find many opportunities to show unselfish love. In this world, people feel unloved and isolated for many reasons. We'll see this in the experience of Jessen Senahonun.
Life was simple, I remember. I am Jessen, and I am deaf. Growing up with this disability was hard. When I was younger, I saw people laughing and family showing affection. I just walked around the neighborhood and observed what was going on around me. I saw them walking and talking and wondered what that was all about. Everything was a mystery to me. But one day was a little different. I saw children my age having fun, and they wanted me to play with them. I said to myself, "Me? I can't believe they actually wanted me to be with them." For once, I felt welcomed. And that was how we became the best of friends. Time went by so fast. We grew up spending time and discovering new things together. I was having so much fun with their company that even questionable acts seemed right to me. I learned how to smoke. They taught me how to drink alcohol to our heart's content. It felt like it was the best time of our lives. I thought everything we did was how things were actually supposed to be. One day, in a deaf search in our area, the witnesses found me. I was hesitant at first, but they were very kind and friendly. They educated me. They even taught me how to sign my name. Eventually, I studied the Bible with them. I learned different truths from the Bible. Finally came to know Jehovah, the only true God. I learned the things Jehovah liked and disapproved of. Our Bible study moved me to re-examine the life I lived. I realized that what I did before wasn't pleasing to Jehovah. My love for Jehovah grew deeper, and I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I started to attend Christian meetings, and I met new friends in the congregation. The Bible changed my life. I gave my all to Jehovah and decided to dedicate myself to Him. It brought me nothing but real happiness. Now, I am in full-time service, eagerly declaring the good news. I was appointed to serve as a ministerial servant in our congregation. And I was called to volunteer in Bethel, too. I wouldn't have felt genuine happiness in accomplishing these spiritual assignments if I wasn't in Jehovah's organization. To all the deaf out there that haven't had the chance to know Jehovah yet, I hope and encourage you to study the Bible with the witnesses too. Look at me. Before, I wasn't able to read and write. I realized that even if we can't hear, we can still have a relationship with the only true God. I hope you find the same love and joy as I did under Jehovah's loving hands. Jehovah has helped me, and for that, I will always thank and love Him with all my heart.
If you are deaf and you would like to learn more about the Bible, we hope you are watching a sign language interpretation of this program and that you'll accept Jessen's invitation to study the Bible with Jehovah's Witnesses. You too can develop an intimate relationship with God and become part of a loving, united family. As we discussed earlier, our unity can suffer if we allow minor matters to affect us. In our next video, notice what we can do to set aside such feelings and preserve unity.
Many years ago, I started working at a firm and I helped the sister to get a position at the same firm. As time went on, I may have come to the wrong conclusion, but I felt that this sister wanted to be in charge. I didn't feel very happy about it. A few months later, I was retrenched from work. I felt very hurt. My mother always told me to be the lesser one and just to let things go. So I kept quiet and I left the firm. Due to certain circumstances, we changed congregations, so we didn't see each other anymore. During those years, at meetings or reading the Bible, we are regularly reminded to be forgiving. It felt to me like a stab in my heart, because I knew we had to apply this counsel. Being at the convention, every time it made me a bit nervous, because I basically had to prepare myself. Should I bump into her, how I was going to handle it? It did ruin the spiritual atmosphere of the convention. Soon after my mother passed away, we had our regional convention. I was very emotional. I saw this sister standing and I wondered to myself, what is going to happen now? She came up to me, she gave me a hug and a small present. That particular day, I definitely felt relieved and I felt I could now make peace. If both of us had applied earlier the advice given in Colossians 3 verse 13 by being forgiving, neither of us would have had to carry this emotional burden for so many years. Now I am very happy to say Mona and I are good friends today.
We serve together in the same congregation as elders. And the relationship I have today with Luis is that we're friends. But when we transferred it to the workplace, that beautiful friendship began to fade.
Well, as a builder, I'm old school and used to being in charge. Perhaps I was too proud, but somebody couldn't come and tell me how to do certain things. Since I was a crew leader, I said right from the start, "So, what is he doing here? Does he have any right to an opinion about this?" So I made sure to push the brother aside completely.
I can remember that when I entered the Kingdom Hall through one door and I saw Brother Luis, I would look for any possible excuse to avoid him, and I wouldn't even say hello. Neither of us said hello.
For me, the internal battle between the fleshly minded person and the spiritual person was a very tough battle.
It was like that for several years. And now I think I wasted time. Something that would have helped me to maintain peace and unity with my brother would have been to be obedient to what Jehovah says, to what the Bible says, to what we hear at the meetings. Sadly, I wasn't obedient. The lesson that I've learned from this is that Jehovah is always right. In the exact moment when something happens, we should immediately act.
Carlos Henry himself was the one that then stopped me and told me, "We can't keep going on like this." He took a very important step so that we could sort things out. To be happy, you have to apply the principles you find in God's Word. The words at Romans chapter 14 verse 19 encourage us to pursue the things making for peace. What I would have done differently is that I wouldn't have let time go by. Instead, I should have sought out the brother more promptly and restored that friendship again.
Although it's true that you can't recover time, you can recover a brother. My relationship once again with Luis is that we're friends, and he's a true friend.
After Cecilia was retrenched, that is, she lost her job, She resented her spiritual sister for a time. This robbed her of her peace. Carlos and Luis also allowed petty differences to divide them. The lesson is clear. Put up with and forgive one another. We delight in the variety of cultures represented in our brotherhood. But as we'll see in our next segment, we have to be vigilant not to put our local culture ahead of Bible principles.
Growing up in Canada, I had a view of what hospitality was. Hospitality was have the brothers and sisters over, get to know them, share a meal together, something that I planned to offer to them. I don't think I ever realized how much I had been influenced by my own culture in defining what I thought hospitality was.
Culture has a very big effect on us. In our culture, young ones are not trusted very much. They are not given responsibility. I have seen the effect of the culture inside the congregation, especially when the question of giving younger ones more privileges of service or assignments came up. When it was discussed among the elders, it would not really be considered. And so the desire would be for him to wait a little bit longer, mature a little more, gain more life experience. I also thought the same way. When I look back now, I realize that it really wasn't right, because Jehovah's thinking isn't like that.
So when I attended the special convention in Ukraine, my view of what hospitality was changed completely. We get off the plane, all the brothers are there, we see the love. We're overwhelmed by just the quantity of the brothers that are there, their smiles, their expressions. As the days went on, it was clear they were just looking for what we needed. And it was more than, you know, just giving us some food and spending some time with us. There were so many other things that they did that covered every one of our needs when I'm not sure that their own needs were being covered at times. They knew they just wanted to be there, and they'd figure out the rest when they got there. And that really impressed myself and my wife. I do remember one night getting back to the hotel, and we had a moment to just really think about what we'd seen that day and started to ask ourselves if we'd ever gone to the same extent. Where I'm from, we tend to stick with what we're very comfortable with. I realized that I really had unknowingly been putting limits on hospitality because of what I was comfortable with, because of the culture where I grew up. Whereas the experience in Ukraine helped me to see that we can break that barrier down so much faster. We could definitely feel that this was what Jehovah's view of hospitality was. It was about looking for what others need and filling those needs.
In time, my thinking changed because I realized Jehovah's way of thinking. The videos produced by Jehovah's organization and what I watched in them helped my view to change. I could actually see what a young brother or a young elder could do. In the past, we used to focus on experience. I would too. But now Jehovah's viewpoint is more important than just experience. Jehovah doesn't only focus on experience, but also on spiritual qualities. I came to realize that.
So after we experienced the special convention in Ukraine and returned home, we decided we need to consider this more as a family worship project. We realized we did have to make some adjustments. We realized we did want to do more. So we had to set specific goals to be able to strip away our previous definition of hospitality and start extending it beyond what we were comfortable with. It takes work to continually break free from the limits that we might set for ourselves. And it was something we realized we need to make some changes if we were going to maintain Jehovah's view of hospitality moving forward.
Of course, the influence of the culture doesn't go away overnight. We still need to work hard on it. We still have to change because traces of the culture can still be left over. But I realize we definitely need to get rid of it. Now, I'm really pleased to serve with those young brothers, to talk with them, and to see their potential as Jehovah sees it. We can also see that Jehovah is very pleased too. Jehovah is overjoyed. He's proud to see what those young brothers do.
Like our brothers in the video, it's good for each of us to do a prayerful self-examination. If we always put Bible principles ahead of our local culture, we strengthen our precious Christian unity. The internet and other technologies allow the governing body to serve the brotherhood in ways not possible just a few years ago. The tools may be new, but the work is not. In our next segment, we'll learn what past members of the governing body did to stay connected with and serve Jehovah's people everywhere.
The governing body has always felt a keen responsibility to live up to Jesus' command, "Feed my lambs, shepherd my little sheep." Today's technology makes the governing body feel like family. But did the worldwide brotherhood in times past enjoy such a strong bond with the governing body?
Let's go back to January of 1945. Brothers Knorr and Franz set out on a tour of Latin America that ended up with conventions in North America. It took 4 months. The purpose was to visit branches already established, to organize new branches, to forward the movement of the kingdom preaching work.
And service tours often combine supervising operations at a branch, giving talks at conventions, dedicating new facilities, overnight visits to remote missionary homes, followed by evening meetings with a local congregation. All this packed into a few days.
They provided instruction on field ministry, how to conduct meetings, but also what was taking place in the worldwide field. And then they would take time to go out into the field ministry with them. One such visit included a stopover in Guatemala, where they visited a very small congregation of just 8 people.
Their heart was in the preaching work. I can speak from my own experience that the missionaries were very close to Brother Knorr's heart. So after sending them first to Latin America, he was eager to see their progress. And so he visited them. And then over the years, he traveled the world. And he visited as many missionary homes as he possibly could. He privately met each missionary personally to talk over their challenges, to arrange for better accommodations if needed, to assess the potential for growth, or even to establish a new branch or arrange to purchase new property if needed.
Brother Knorr loved the brotherhood, especially missionaries and branch personnel. And he would take an opportunity of a 15 or 20 minute stopover in a train station or at an airport to give encouragement or to help them to advance the preaching work.
Brother Knorr had deep concern for the welfare of the brothers in the war-torn countries of Europe. Brother Knorr and Henschel, they traveled to Britain, France, Switzerland, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Scandinavia in November 1945. Imagine, just few months after World War ended, the railroad track was destroyed, bridges were destroyed, so there were no good connections between the cities. It was not a tourist travel, it was really a hard work. But even this they did for loving the brothers and helping and encouraging the brothers in these countries.
After visiting the friends in war-torn Europe, then brothers Knorr and Henschel embarked on a very ambitious and extensive 47,000-mile tour. They visited some lands where there were few or even no witnesses. If no branch operated in a country they visited, They connected with the local congregations in private homes. They attended their meetings, and they accompanied the local publishers to the homes of interested ones for group meetings. And they often rented venues for public meetings. Brothers Knorr and Henschel went on the streets to advertise the talk that evening. And then Brother Knorr himself even rode with bicycle parades to advertise his talks. And these meetings attracted hundreds of interested ones, even though in one city there was a threatening note that was received.
Well, things don't always turn out as planned. Brother Knorr and Brother Henschel had a service tour of countries in Africa. One of those was Nigeria, and they were to give talks at two conventions. One of those conventions was 400 miles away and involved a road trip. So they got off to an early start at 3:30 in the morning. On the end of the trip, they started to have car problems. Those car problems turned into a grueling 18-hour delay, and they realized they weren't going to make the convention. So they decided to go back to the branch in Lagos. But the return trip took 24 hours through jungle roads and additional car problems. They get back to the branch, they take a very brief rest, and they're on to the next branch.
Brother Knorr loved the brothers, and he enjoyed being with them. I remember very well how after his concluding talk, he waved to the brothers, and we in the audience drug out handkerchiefs and waved back for many minutes. But that was not all. He and Brother Henschel then went to the railroad station to say farewell to the brothers leaving in special trains. They called out, Auf Wiedersehen, gute Reise. And they stayed there till 10:30 at night doing that. They thought not of their comfort, but they thought of the brothers.
A request to hold a large special meeting in Athens in 1952 was not granted by the authorities because of religious interference. But not wanting to miss an opportunity to encourage the Greek brothers, Brother Knorr came up with an alternate plan. He and Brother Henschel would take taxis to the homes of local brothers where they would give a talk for approximately 20 minutes. Then they would go on to another home, even though they risked arrest because of meeting together. They were able to meet with 905 of our Greek brothers. In describing that day, Brother Knorr wrote, "It was one of the most blessed experiences of our lives."
Brother Franz visited Spain many times, but during the 50s, our work was under ban. Brother Franz wanted to encourage the local brothers, but he was especially concerned for their safety. On this one event, Brother Franz and his driver decided to park their car near the home of their host, a certain Brother Garcia, who was a mechanic. So with the hood of the car open, they asked a neighbor, "Is there a mechanic in the area?" Of course, he was referred to Brother Garcia. Brother Garcia then looked at the car and said, "Your car needs to come into my shop." That was the opportunity for Brother Franz to meet some local brothers and sisters. When it was time to walk to the meeting later that day, Brother Franz decided to wear the beret and a sheepskin coat typical for the area so that he would safely blend in with his brothers.
Well, these brothers were a very loving and courageous men. They worked very hard to keep the brothers and countries under ban, fired up with zeal, even risking their own safety. Brother Franz actually was arrested while meeting with the brothers in Barcelona, Spain.
Well, these schedules that they kept, they must have been exhausting. If a country under ban was on the itinerary, they might pay a visit to government officials to promote legalization of our work.
Brother Knorr visited all of the branches to encourage the brothers, and he talked with the missionaries. But in the 1950s, there was much growth, and that proved to be too much for him alone. So he decided that it would be appropriate to train some of us brothers so that we could assist in that work and see that the shepherding is done and that the work in the branches is done in unity.
On a service tour of Africa in 1963, Brother Henschel attended the convention at Gabarna, Liberia. Suddenly, soldiers invaded the convention. They arrested Brother Henschel and others. He was mistreated, beaten with a rifle butt to the point where he thought he was going to die. But he remained on the scene to encourage and assist the brothers to be faithful, to avoid compromise. And when finally he was released, instead of going home, he completed his assignment to visit other branches, and upon return, never acted the part of a hero or a martyr. It was just the cost of doing the Lord's business.
Well, the headquarters representatives wanted the best for delegates to a convention. Brothers Knorr and Henschel were known to personally inspect venues and even negotiate contracts. In more recent times, Brother Jarrus personally visited hotels to make sure that there was a proper standard of comfort and cleanliness. He even tested out the beds.
Brother Knorr was well aware of the situation that the brothers were facing in the Soviet Union. He wrote many letters in which he called on the brothers to live in harmony under the direction of the organization. One such letter fell into the hands of the KGB. They altered it. But when Brother Knorr was told about it, he drew the brothers' attention to the spirit of the letter. Because from the spirit of the letter, it would be evident immediately whether it was a letter from the organization or a forged letter. This was because the spirit of the organization serves to unite the brothers, not divide them.
All this attention to the international activity was taking place while simultaneously directing the work and expansion at World Headquarters, handling various legal issues, organizing and speaking at conventions throughout the United States, Gilead School lectures and graduation, annual meeting programs, and all the while taking care of their own spiritual well-being and that of their wife, if married.
The next few decades would see even greater growth, but greater challenges.
What beautiful reminders of the efforts our brothers made to serve our spiritual family. And there's more to share. In a future broadcast, we'll recall additional ways the governing body has preserved unity. Now it's time for our new music video. It highlights the many blessings of unity.
We're not on our own. Together we're
This month's program encouraged us to stand together as one united people. At times, we may be isolated, but with Jehovah, we are never alone. We learn not to allow petty matters or cultural norms to disrupt our unity. By building a close relationship with Jehovah, Jessen became a member of a loving family. We were encouraged to seek opportunities to show unselfish love. And we reflected on the many ways the governing body has worked to keep us as a united people. In this month's video postcard, we go to the island of Newfoundland in Canada. A large island at the far eastern coast of North America, Newfoundland is an amazing place of unique contrasts in weather, geography, and natural beauty. Sister Edith Mason brought the truth here more than a century ago. She was a single full-time minister in Nova Scotia. In 1914, she resolved to go by herself to preach in Newfoundland, where there were no witnesses at that time. After much prayer and planning, she arranged for the photo drama of creation to be brought here in 1916. Over 10,000 people viewed this groundbreaking presentation. Some of the early preaching work was done by boat. Over the years, the brothers used 4 missionary boats to cover over 6,400 kilometers, or more than 4,000 miles, of coastal territory. After the Second World War, spiritual activity increased. In 1945, a branch office was established, and the first group of Gilead-trained missionaries arrived. The branch office continued to operate until 1981. Gilead graduates Bernie and Elizabeth Mailer were assigned to Newfoundland. They helped establish a congregation in Bonavista in 1952. Today, the Bonavista congregation has 38 publishers and 4 regular pioneers. The need remains great in Newfoundland. Almost 30% of Canada's unassigned territory is here. When publishers come to help, they enjoy Newfoundland's well-known warm hospitality. Our brothers and sisters in the Bonavista congregation send you their love and greetings. Earlier, we shared a preview of this year's Pursue Peace Regional Convention. Now, we'd like to give you a glimpse of the convention's feature Bible drama, Jehovah Guides Us in the Way of Peace.
There is a God in the heavens who is a revealer of secrets. And he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what is to happen in the final part of the days.
The divine dream that Daniel interprets for King Nebuchadnezzar constitutes a prophecy crucial for the lasting peace of mankind.
Jehovah knows the course of history centuries, even millenniums in advance.
And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom will be partly strong and partly fragile.
History has shown us how every type of human government imaginable has failed.
It's only Jehovah who has the ability to guide humans to real, lasting peace.
He has led his people in the past. So when he prophesies
That he'll lead his people to real, lasting peace in the future? This isn't a prediction. It's a guarantee. The peace we seek is certain under God's kingdom.
I'd like to share one more reason to be excited about the convention. It's my pleasure to announce that we'll conclude the convention with a new original song. The song and lyrics are now available on JW.org. The governing body requests that all of us practice the new song. And if someone needs help to download the song, please give them a hand and practice with them. Then together we'll sing out with all of our hearts to Jehovah's praise. As we conclude this month's program, please know that we sincerely love and appreciate each one of you. From the world headquarters of Jehovah's Witnesses, this is JW Broadcasting.